Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Passover versus Easter when we come back. 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small. But you shall have a perfect and a just weight, a perfect and a just measure shall you have, that your days may be lengthened in the land which the Eternal your God gives you, for all that do such things and all that do unrighteously are an abomination unto the Eternal your God." You'll read that in Deuteronomy 25, verses 13 through 16. Well, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention back in 1787 followed that scriptural principle when they put into our Constitution, at Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words. They say, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts." But back in 1933, President Franklin Roosevelt took our gold away. And in 1964, President Johnson took our silver coin out of circulation. And in place of just weights and balances, these two presidents introduced our current practice of the first, the second, and the fifth planks of the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system, and they gave us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver coin. Now, in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our nation? Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons in my Mosaic Law School conducted twice a year here at the law school. If you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? Now, that's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free, free of charge. And you can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. And then click onto the email machine and send an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. Well, the other day I got another letter from a listener up in Ohio, a fellow by the name of Jim, kind of short and to the point. He said, "I hope all is well with you in Missouri. I'm still trying to get a hearing in court for a couple of issues that are important to me. But could you email me with the calculation of Passover this year and how you arrive at that particular time? Thank you, Jim in Ohio." Well, like I did last week and the week before, every now and again I get a letter in here that asks for a specific answer. The answer is fairly simple. It's no big mystery. The answer is April 26th, this Passover day. Foot washing, bread, wine, and the song occur on April the 25th after sundown. You kill the lamb at 3 p.m. on the 26th, and then you eat the Passover after sundown on the 26th day, which is actually the 27th, because days begin and end at sundown, according to the scripture in Leviticus 23, verses 32. All right, now that's the simple answer. But he also wanted to know a more complex revelation, and that is, how do you calculate it? How do you figure out which day is the Passover? Well, dummy, you go to Hallmark cards. If Hallmark doesn't know, who does? And if Hallmark doesn't know, well, then you just go to your calendar. And then I'm looking at my calendar right here, Jim, and it says right here on the calendar, Passover occurs on the 13th of April, April 13th. And if you want to know when Easter occurs, well, Easter occurs on the 16th of April. See how easy that is? You just go to Hallmark or go to your calendar and they'll tell you the answer. But this listener, this fellow Jim, who's an old-timey student, wants to know, yeah, I hear you, Mr. Gordon, but how did you calculate Passover, and why are you keeping it on the 26th when the calendar says that Passover is on the 13th? And it doesn't agree with Hallmark. Well, let me see if I can get the static out of here, boys and girls. Stand by. Yeah, that sounds a little better. Well, he's right. Jim hit the nail on the head. I don't keep the Passover on the 13th. I keep it on the 26th. And, of course, when people hear that, they say, well, why aren't you keeping it like the Jews keep it? After all, the Passover is Jewish. Well, I disagree, as they say in law. I dissent from that opinion. I do not believe that the Passover is Jewish. I know, that's a little wild and off the wall. But let me tell you why I don't think the Passover is Jewish. And that's because when the Passover was first given to us, we find it in Leviticus chapter 23. Actually, the Passover story occurs in Exodus chapter 12, but in Leviticus chapter 23, verses 4 through 8, it tells us a little piece of the story. So if you got a Bible handy, go look at it and we'll find out from God himself whether this Passover is Jewish or not. It says, "These are the feasts of the Eternal, even holy convocations, which you shall proclaim in their seasons. In the 14th day of the first month at even is the Lord's Passover, and on the 15th day of the same month is the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Unto the Eternal 7 days you must eat unleavened bread. And in the first day you shall have a holy convocation, and you shall do no servile work therein. But you shall offer an offering made by fire unto the Eternal 7 days, and the 7th day is a holy convocation, and you shall do no servile work therein." All right, now if you take a look here, in Leviticus chapter 23, verses 4 through 8, we'll answer the very first question, is the Passover Jewish? And in the Bible it says the Passover is the Feast of the Eternal. So this is the feast of the God of Abraham. Now, the Jews do not practice the Passover, and to my knowledge, they never have. The Jews observe Passover, and if you look on the calendar, they're going to observe the Passover on the 13th of April. And I imagine Hallmark cards go to the Jews. They go to some Jewish rabbi, they go to some Jewish council, some Jewish authority, and they get the date from that Jewish authority in the same way that I'm sure that the Hallmark people and the calendar people go to the Christians, or some Christian authority, or some Christian church, probably the Catholic Church, and ask them, when is Easter? And they have a method, they have a way, they have some way that they calculate Easter, some way that they calculate the Passover. Now, the Passover has been calculated by many, many people in many, many different ways. For instance, I've heard of people telling me that you begin the count for the Passover on the spring equinox, and that's easy enough to figure out. So you go to March 21st. And that's the equinox. Okay, now you count 14 days from the equinox, and that'll take you up to the Passover day. That's one way to calculate it. That isn't the biblical way to calculate it, but it is one way that people calculate it. Or you can go to the equinox, and then you can wait until the next new moon, which we all know is a crescent. And that crescent moon, then, is the first day of the new year, and so you start your 14-day count from that crescent moon. And then there's always some contrarians around, nutty people, that don't believe you should wait until the crescent moon appears. And they start counting from the absolute equinox of the full moon. There's a name for that. It's called Pyrrha something or other. And you see, the crescent of the moon doesn't appear until about 3 days after the cycle begins. And the cycle is 29 and a half days. I don't know why God couldn't have, while he was at it, just evened it out to 30 days. And I don't know why he couldn't have just figured out how to put the sun and the earth in their, the earth and its orbit around the sun in 360 days so that you got 12 months of 30 days each, 360 days in a year. I don't know if he was just incompetent or he was drunk or he wasn't thinking that day or what the hell was going on. But you got 365 and it isn't even equal. It's 365 and a fourth days. Can you imagine how much more difficult it is to calculate a calendar with 365 and a quarter days instead of 360, which would have come out exactly even? Now, you'd have thought God could have figured that out. And think about that for us poor mortals down here to make the job easy for us, but he didn't. Gets worse. Then he puts the moon in orbit, and instead of 30 days, it comes out 29 and a half. It's worse than that. It's 29 and a half and then a few odd minutes and seconds. Now, you'd think that a God that's powerful enough to create the sun, the moon, the stars, and the universe and all the stars and galaxies and quasars and all the good stuff that's out there would have had at least a little bit more power, and he just could have evened that out. And then we go to some religious guys and they tell us that what we've got here is a sacred calendar that comes from the Bible. And then we've got other people that say, no, no, what we have here is a sacred calendar that was compiled by a fellow named Halil II. We'll hear a little bit about Halil here as we progress along. But you know, then there's some contrarians come along and they say, no, no, you calculate the Passover from the equinox, but not on the crescent moon, it's from the full moon. Can you imagine such insanity, calculating holy days by the full moon? I thought that was the day that the werewolves come out. Full moon. All right, now as you can see that there's five or six ways of calculating this thing called the Passover. And then there's the biblical way, which I guess is what Jim wrote this letter for. Could you tell me how it's done in the Bible? And the answer to that is yes, I can do that. Which is the purpose for this week's segment on Passover versus Easter. Because most people, intelligent, thinking, biblically oriented people do not practice Passover at all. Doesn't even enter their mind. Doesn't even come up on the radar. They practice Easter, which, by the way, is found in the Bible one time. Did you know that? So in case you didn't know where this is located, Jim, it's in Acts 12, verse 4. You'll find the word Passover has been deleted and the word Easter has been put in its place. And that was done deliberately by the King James translators because they were Christians, not Jews. And they didn't do Passover, they did Easter. And they knew that Easter belonged in the Bible and that God had made a mistake. And so they fixed his error. Isn't that just real special? Thought you'd love it. And so when God makes a mistake, we humans are right there to fix it for him. He should be very, very happy with us. Now, there's some confusion out here as to which day the Passover comes, or whether or not we should practice the Passover or Easter. Christians don't have any such problems. They all know that Easter is correct, that Jesus practiced Easter, and that Jesus rose on Easter Sunday morning, and that Easter is correct. Passover is Jewish. Passover is wrong. The Jews have got that all backwards, and they're not going to do the Passover. So we ought to take a look at this thing of Passover versus Easter, don't you think? And we ought to take a look at the calendar and the various and sundry methodologies that have been foisted off upon us, and then ask the question, well, should we use these methodologies or should we go to the Bible? Or is there a place in the Bible where it tells you how to figure out the Passover or how to figure out Easter? I mean, you know, let's be intelligent people about it. My wife one time was in court. She was a witness in a case, and she was on the witness stand testifying, and the lawyer, his name was Tim Gammon, asked her, he said, well, now, Mrs. Gordon, is it true that you practiced the Passover? And she said, yeah, it's true. And he said, now, Mrs. Gordon, did you practice the Passover this year? And she said, yep, I did. And he said, now, what day did you practice the Passover this year? And she told him, and I forgot what day it was. You know, it was April the 10th or 15th or whatever the date was. And he said, now, how did you come to the conclusion that Passover was on April the 10th or 15th? And she said, well, because my husband told me. And he said, well, I'm not really interested in what your husband told you. I want to know, how did you calculate the Passover this year? And she said, well, my husband calculated it, and he told me which day the Passover fell on, and so that's the way I did it. And she said, well, then you don't know how to practice. You don't know how to calculate the Passover, do you? And she says, no, I don't. And he said, well, then, if you don't know how to practice the Passover, then how do you know that your husband has calculated it correctly? And she was getting a little antsy by now, saying, and this is my wife, old acid tongue Jackie. And she said, well, who calculates Easter for you, Christian? Hallmark cards? Now, most of us do not take the time, effort, and energy to go out and calculate the Passover. What they do is they call me on the telephone and they say, I'm not satisfied with the calendar and I'm not satisfied with Hallmark. And I know that you've gone to the scripture and calculated it based upon the scripture. So now this fellow Jim is going a step further and he wants to know, well, Mr. Gordon, how did you calculate? How do you go about doing that? And the answer is, I got it from a guy by the name of Eckert. R. A. Eckert. Well, now, how do we know that R. A. Eckert is any more accurate than the Jews, or any more accurate than the Pope, or any more accurate than anybody else? You know, at some point in time, somebody actually has to be able to go to the Bible and code-plete it out and figure out, what did God intend when he told us to keep the Passover on the 14th day of the first month? How do we calculate the first month? How do we figure out the first day of the first month? That's the problem. Once we know what the first day of the first month is, any nitwit can count 14. Hell, even if you've been to public school, you could do that. But trying to figure out the first day of the first month. Well, you know, the average guy comes along and he says, that's already done. It's January the 1st. Well, then, that's easy enough. Then the 14th day of January is Passover Day. See how simple that is? But somehow or another, everybody kind of knows that, well, January the 14th ain't exactly the right day. I mean, just kind of intuitively, it's so far away from Easter, and how come we're not keeping Easter in January? Well, it's because Jesus died sometime around Passover. And we know that historically Passover occurs in the spring of the year. So if Passover occurs 14 days after the first day of the new year, and the new year begins in the spring, then why are we beginning our days in the middle of winter, or at the beginning of winter, which is about January the 1st. You know, the winter equinox occurs on December the 21st, and then about 10 days later, 10 days into winter, we've got January 1st, the beginning of the new year. And we have these big parties in Times Square concerning New Year's Day. Where did we get that? Did that come from the Bible? Or did that come from the Babylonians or the Assyrians or some other pagan gang out here someplace? Anybody ever thought about it? Does anybody really care? Well, the word Passover appears in the Bible 76 times. It should appear 77 times, but it only appears 76 times. And that's because of Acts 12, verse 4, at least in the King James Version, where the King James translators translated the word Passover in the original. They translated it Easter in Acts 12, 4, so that you Christians would have a biblical basis for believing in Easter. Isn't that just real special? Did it just for you at no extra cost whatsoever. And the word Passovers, P-A-S-S-O-V-E-R-S, is found one time in the Bible in 2 Chronicles 30, verses 17. So the word Passover refers to several entities here. So number one, it refers to the lamb. If you have a lamb out there, it could be the Passover lamb. I could ask you, is that your Passover lamb for this year? Or I could say, did you kill the Passover this year? Which would refer to a little animal called a lamb. It also refers to the entire festival, as we saw in Leviticus 23, verse 4. The festival is an 8-day festival, which includes the Passover day, which is the 14th, and then the days of unleavened bread, which run from the 15th to the 21st. A total of 7 days of unleavened bread plus the Passover day itself, which is 8 days. Which is the spring festival, which is the mirror image of the fall festival, which occurs in the fall of the year. And it falls on the 15th day of the 7th month. Isn't that just special? Just 6 months later, on the 15th day of the 7th month, we come up with the Feast of Tabernacles, which at the end of the feast has an 8th day called the last great day of the feast. So there's 8 holy days in the fall, 8 holy days in the spring. That's 8, and 8 is 16. 16. Remember, I've said in the past, you have 19 paid holidays. So when we did tithing here a couple of weeks ago, I showed you got 19 paid holidays. Well, here they are. 8 in the spring, 8 in the fall. Where's the other 3? You get 1 in the summer, late spring or early summer, which is in June typically, and it's called the Feast of Weeks. That's a 1-day festival. Just one holy day, Feast of Weeks. It occurs 50 days after the Sabbath during the days of unleavened bread. That's the way you calculate it. But before we can get to the Feast of Weeks and calculate that date, we have to know what the first day of the first month is, which is what Jim wants to know. Then you've got the Feast of Trumpets, which is the first day of the 7th month. And then the Day of Atonement, which is the 10th day of the 7th month. So you get the Feast of Weeks, Feast of Trumpets, and then the Day of Atonement. 3 days. You got 8 in the spring, 8 in the fall, and 3 in between, which is 19. 8 and 8, 16, and 3 is 19 paid holidays. And that's why you save that second tithe, so that you can go up to keep these festivals. Why don't you go tell your boss that you'd like to get your vacation pay on these holy days? And watch this guy look at you like you're Mork from Mork. But that's what second tithe is all about. That's been counterfeited, you know. Second tithe is now counterfeited by paid holidays. It's your vacation pay. All right, so now that we've got the 19 paid holidays out of the way, this festival can also refer to the 14th day of the first month. So it can be a lamb, it can be a day, it can be the whole festival, the whole 8 days. or it can actually refer to the Messiah. In 1 Corinthians 5, verse 7, the Apostle Paul was inspired to write, "Christ, our Passover, is sacrificed for us." And that's why Christians do not practice the Passover, because Christ, who is our Passover, has already been sacrificed for us. And so the Jews, they got it all backwards and upside down, and they're just dummies and don't know what they're doing. And so they're out here observing the Passover every year when they should be observing Easter. Right? And then you've got Jesus over here. He said, "Think not that I've come to destroy the law or the prophets. I didn't come to destroy, but to fulfill." And so they say, well, see, he fulfilled it, and so therefore we don't have to. And so they don't. Now, that's the other half of that story. So that's why Christians do not practice the Passover, because Christ our Passover was sacrificed for us, and he came to fulfill the law, and he came and fulfilled it. And now that he's fulfilled it, it's all done away with and taken care of, and we don't have to do it anymore. And so there you are. All right. Now, there's also in the Scripture an alternative Passover that you find in Numbers 9, verses 6 through 14. I'll cover that a little later when we get to it. The alternative Passover is in case you missed the real Passover, which only occurs once a year, one day a year, the 14th day of the first month. And then you have these days of unleavened bread mentioned in Leviticus 23, verses 4 through 8. There's 7 days of unleavened bread, of which there's 2 holy days in there, 2 Sabbaths. There are annual Sabbaths, of which there are 7 of these annual Sabbaths. Now, we have 52 weekly Sabbaths. That occurs every Saturday, Jim. Saturday, the weekly Sabbath, celebrated from even until even. If you'll go to Numbers, now let's see if I can find that again. Days aren't calculated from midnight to midnight here in the Bible. They're calculated from even until even. And you'll find that in Leviticus chapter 23, verse 32, talking about the Day of Atonement. "It shall be unto you a Sabbath of rest, and you shall afflict your souls in the 9th day of the month at even. From even until even shall you celebrate your Sabbath." So if you want to know when Sabbaths begin and end, the Bible tells you that it's at sundown, from even until even. So when you see the sunset, you're just watching the sun, well, as soon as it disappears in total from the horizon, a new day has just begun. All right? And the old day has just ended. Now, of course, Christians practice new days at midnight to midnight, and we don't want to disturb those people. If that's what they want to do, they certainly have a right to do that. After all, we have a First Amendment in our Constitution that guarantees everybody the right to freedom of religion, freedom of belief, freedom of practice. If they want to do that, that's no problem. But Jim here wants to know, well, how did you figure that out from the Bible? And I couldn't figure out that days begin at midnight from the Bible, because that isn't what the Bible teaches. It's not what the Bible tells us. But in Leviticus 23, verse 32, it tells us that the days begin and end at even. Even begins at sundown. Sundown. All right, so the Passover occurs in the Bible 76 times. Should be 77. Passover's plural appears in the Bible one time and refers to the lambs. Now, have you ever wondered how many lambs we would need to celebrate the Passover? Well, the Bible tells us that when you take your lamb, you take a lamb for a family. Well, what if you're an emancipated male and you've left home, but you haven't married and don't have any children? Well, if you're an emancipated male, then you should do your own Passover lamb, because you are your own family. Now, if you're not emancipated and you're still living at home under your father's roof, under your father's supervision, under your father's law, well, then you do the Passover at your father's house when he does it, and at the appointed season, and you're a part of that family. This is kind of important. We'll see that a little later on as we progress along. because two or three families can share a lamb, as we see here in Exodus chapter 12. So you, if you didn't want to do your lamb all by yourself, Bob, then you could join up with another family and you could share in the Passover and do the Passover. But if you're an emancipated family, you got to pay your prorated share, whereas if you're a member of a family, you don't pay anything. The patriarch of the family puts on the shindig, puts on the holy day, puts on the festival. All right, so we could have three or four families together. Now, let's suppose for the sake of our discussion that it takes approximately six or eight people to eat a lamb. Well, two families would typically do a lamb here on Passover. A Passover lamb will comfortably feed about 16 people, or about four families of four. That's a man and his wife and two children. Four of those families. If you have a full-grown lamb, that's a lamb of the first year, and the lamb weighs approximately 50 to 60 pounds, live weight. When you kill that lamb, 16 people comfortably. You could probably stretch it a little bit to 20. But I would say that if you're going to have 16 people or 32 people in the festival, you might want to kill two lambs. Instead of one big one, you might want two smaller ones. Maybe two 30 to 40 pounders might do the job for a larger gathering. Now, let's suppose that you just have a small group, just your family, a man and his wife, and two, three, four children. Then a small lamb of about, oh, say, 3 months old. Maybe 3 to 6 months, maybe 25, 30-pound lamb, something like that. One lamb should do a family of about, you know, 4 to 6 people, probably 8 people could eat one, small one. And so in Exodus 12, we're instructed that we should size the lamb for our family and that we should size the number of families with the lamb. So two or three or four families can go in together. All right, now, with that out of the way, let's take a look here at a couple other factors. You've got the Passover day itself is not a holy day. So the 14th day of the first month, the Passover day is not a holy day. There are two holy days here. It's the 15th and the 21st day of that first month, whatever that first month is, which we haven't calculated yet. Hey, hang on, I got to give you a reminder, and we'll be back with more on Passover versus Easter when we return. I need to remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. And all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date at our webpage. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, economics, history, health, news, and current events, 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order your free CD package, just call the law school direct and ask for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to the authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite on the Law Hour are political, or they're religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the Passover versus Easter. So, the Passover refers to a day, it refers to a lamb, it refers to a period of time, 8 days, or it appears, or it applies to the Messiah, or it applies to the first day, or excuse me, it applies to the 14th day of the first month called the Passover day. Now remember, the days of unleavened bread are a part of this Passover week. So in general, when the Bible refers to Passover, it's referring to the festival of the Passover, which includes the days of unleavened bread. It's an 8-day festival, which is the mirror image of the festival in the fall called the Feast of Tabernacles. The first Passover was done in Egypt. There were approximately 3 million people in Egypt. So if we take 3 million and divide that by 6, they needed 500,000 lambs on the very first Passover. 500,000 lambs. You know, the Basques out in Idaho and Utah, Montana, Wyoming, are from the Pyrenees Mountains over between France and Spain, Basques. And they're sheep herders. And the Basque community out there in the West, they keep sheep, and they're pretty well known out there in the West as sheep herders and sheep keepers. And they're all Catholics. And I've often wondered about that. See, the Catholics support the fishing industry by recommending that you eat fish on Friday. And all Catholics eat fish on Friday so that they can support the fishing industry. Now, what I don't understand is why you Basques out there aren't supporting the Passover so that once a year you can all kill a lamb, which would really boost the sheep industry, wouldn't it? Would seem like to me 500,000 lambs. Now here in America, I mean, picture this. We got 300 million Americans. So let's just go 300. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Divided by, let's just take 6. That'd be 50 million lambs. I mean, if Americans practice the Passover every year, 6 people to a lamb, you know, just one little lamb for each family, it would be 50 million lambs a year that we would need to do the Passover. Boy, wouldn't that be a bloody mess. All right, now the Passover occurs on a full moon. And that means that The first day of the first month of the year this year occurs on the full moon, which is called Passover this year. And it's called the Jewish Passover this year. Well, actually, that's the first day of the first month. The Jews have it about 2 weeks too early. And then if you count 14 days, you see the full moon occurs on the 13th. And so I go to the Farmer's Almanac. And then you have to do this, and all of you people out there that want to calculate this yourself, you got to get the Farmer's Almanac. And this is kind of important. Because remember that the day begins, the first day of the first month of the year begins, in biblical reckoning, on the new moon. So whether you're calculating this on the crescent or the full moon, and there's a lot of good people out there that practice the Passover, and then they calculate it from the crescent moon. I calculate it from the full moon because you can't make a mistake on the full moon. We're not concerned about the, perihedron, which occurs about 3 days before the crescent is visible. And the full moon, which is the exact time that perihedron or perihedron or something like that occurs when the full moon occurs. So you go to the Farmer's Almanac, and they'll tell you the exact minute and second that the moon becomes full or that you're at the exact bottom of the cycle, which is the dark of the moon. And they'll also tell you when the first crescent appears, and they got that right to the second, too. Right to the minute. Okay, now let's suppose that the full moon gem occurred at 9 o'clock at night. And let's suppose sundown occurred at, 8:10. Can you see that the first day of the month being so close to sundown would make the difference between one whole day? And you can't depend upon the calendar because the calendar keeps track from midnight to midnight. And the Bible keeps track of time from sundown to sundown. So you need the Farmer's Almanac so that you can figure out when the full moon does occur. Because the full moon is full one night, and then you actually find that the exact minute of the full moon can range over about 24 hours of time. From the time that you actually see that first full moon, the day it comes up, it's actually possible to do it without the Farmer's Almanac by observation. But if it's cloudy and you can't see it, see, when the sun sets in the west, the moon rises in the east here in Isabella, Missouri, and the moon will come up immediately with the sunset. That's the full moon day right there. Now you know you hit the full moon. The day before, it's a little bit later, and the day after, it's a little bit different. It's not right at sundown. But I like to go to the Farmer's Almanac, and you buy those in any supermarket, and you can get one probably right now, Farmer's Almanac for the year 2006. And then the Passover is either going to occur in late March, April, or early May. The Passover can actually occur in March, April, or May. Now, I've been observing this and doing it for 22 years. And in the 22 years that I've been doing this, I have not seen it fall in March, and I've not seen it fall in May. But theoretically, it could. And I imagine in the past it has. I don't know when in the past that it did. But I can look at my Farmer's Almanac, and I can see where it could occur. And we'll see that as we progress along, and we get to R.A., is it R.A.? Yeah, R.A. Eckert, New Moon Observance and the Development of the Calendar. We'll take a look at that, and I'll show you how that could happen. I've seen it happen as late as April the 26th, twice. It has fallen on April the 26th. Most of the time, the Passover actually falls in April. In fact, every time that I've done it, it's always fallen in April. And about the earliest I've seen it, if I remember right, was the 3rd of April. The latest I've seen it is the 26th of April. But you can see, if it could have occurred on the 3rd of April, it could have occurred on March the 31st or March 30th or March 29th. You know, a week before. And if it can occur on April the 26th, you know, it could occur on the 27th, 28th, 29th, 30th, or May 1st, 2nd, or 3rd. It could, although I haven't seen it happen. So that'll give you a little bit of guidance there. Passover in Moses' time occurred on the dark of the moon. And we know that because when they left Egypt, they left on the 15th, remember? They all celebrated the Passover, and they had to be through with the Passover by midnight, because the death angel came over at midnight. Remember that? Now, if you take a look in April, midnight doesn't occur at 12 o'clock midnight. It occurs at about 1 o'clock in the morning. Mid means middle. And the sun sets down in that latitude at around 8 o'clock in April, you know, around 8. And then it comes up again in the morning, you know, around 6. And so you've got 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 1, about 10 hours of darkness. So about 5 hours of darkness takes you until about 1 o'clock. So the death angel probably came over around 1 o'clock rather than 12 midnight. But then, you know, I wasn't there that night, so I don't know exactly what time he came over. And the Bible doesn't specifically say what time of the night he came, but it said midnight. And the nighttime portion of the day in April occurs between about 8 o'clock at night and about 6 o'clock in the morning. That's about 10 hours. And the middle of that is about 5 hours. Midnight would have been about 1 o'clock, the way we calculate time today. Now, the Egyptians feared travel on the dark of the moon. And when the Israelites left, the Egyptians did not follow in hot pursuit. They waited a week. And when the Israelites left, they left in the dark of the moon because they needed that pillar of light, you know, that pillar of fire by night to guide them at night and the cloud by day. It's just another piece of evidence that we use here in showing you that the Passover is not calculated from the crescent moon, but it's calculated from the full moon. And then when the Passover day actually occurs, it's in the dark of the moon. Passover day occurs right at the very dark of the moon. And then a few days later, during the days of unleavened bread, you'll see the crescent moon come out. And that'll give you another clue as to what time the Bible tells you to do it. And the pillar of fire, remember, was by night. And about a week later, Pharaoh and his army took off. Now, the Egyptians had a superstition. They wouldn't fight at night, and they wouldn't travel at night unless the moon was there to guide them. Which makes all the sense in the world, because you can't travel at night without some light, because if you've ever been out in the dark of the moon, that period of the time, it's pretty dark. You need a flashlight. Right now, as I speak, the full moon is out, and so you can just walk out there anytime. And I can go out and get the cow in, and I don't even need a flashlight. I can just walk out there, and I can pretty well see her silhouette in the moonlight. Now, in the New Testament, you'll find that Jesus did the Passover. I mean, as crazy as that sounds, Jesus did the Passover. Jesus didn't do Easter. So in Matthew chapter 26, you'll find this Passover, and Jesus did the Passover with bread, wine, foot washing, and a song. Yeah, I know it's kind of crazy, but on the Passover evening, you know, that Last Supper that they were eating, that's the Passover night. And remember, days begin at night. So it isn't day and then night. It's night and then day. So when the Passover began at sundown on the 14th day, they sat down and they had the Last Supper. I suspect they probably had pot roast of beef, potatoes, and bread. But the bread wasn't unleavened. The bread was leavened because the Passover day is not a holy day, and the Passover day is not one of the days of unleavened bread. There are 7 days of unleavened bread, not 8. So the Passover day is a day of leavened bread. So when the Passover day began, Jesus was not doing the Passover itself, which tells me they probably were not eating lamb on the Passover day. We don't eat lamb on the Passover day. You eat the lamb on the first day of unleavened bread at even, as soon as the sun goes down on the 15th. You kill the lamb on the Passover day. You cook the lamb on the Passover day. You prepare the lamb on the Passover day. And Christ, our Passover, was sacrificed for us on the Passover day, the 14th day, and he died at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, about the ninth hour. Do you remember that? Which is the time that you killed the Passover lamb. About 3 o'clock in the afternoon of the Passover day, the 14th day of the first month of the year. Which makes all the sense in the world, Jim, because you see, you killed the lamb at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It takes you about an hour to kill it, skin it, prepare it, put it on the spit, which is at about 4 o'clock. So we kill the lamb, and if I have students here, and it's first time, you know, for many students, I actually go get the lamb about 2 o'clock. And we kill the lamb around 2, and then I let the students prepare it. Because when students are doing it, it takes about 2 hours. If this is the first time you've ever done this, you should probably allow about 2 hours to prepare it. Now, once you have done a lamb, or if you're a real butcher. Now, see, I'm not a real butcher. I'm just a pretender. Just a pretender. I'm not licensed, bonded, or insured. I don't have a license by the government or anything like that. And so I'm not a professional. I'm just an amateur. And so if you're an amateur, then you're just a pretender. If you're just a pretender, you're not a real. So if you're not a real, I'm just a meat cutter, they call me. So I'm not too shabby at it. I can kill the lamb at 3 o'clock and have it ready and on the fire at 4. Now, I start my fire in the barbecue pit. Remember, this lamb has to be roasted. So you can forget about cooking this lamb in the oven. This is not a leg of lamb, boys and girls. This is the whole Passover lamb, the little critter whose bones cannot be broken. We'll talk about that a little later when we get to Exodus 12. But I wanted to point out, I start the fire, Jim, at about noon. And between noon and 4 o'clock, I keep adding wood to the fire until I've got it down to a lot of a bed of coals. And my barbecue pit, see if I can remember the size of it here, I use those concrete blocks. And it's 6 feet long and it's 3 feet wide. So it's 3 by 6 feet. And then I got a pipe that I welded some flat cross pieces on. And then I take a piece of galvanized wire, 2 pieces of galvanized wire, which are about, oh, I'd say 4 feet long in round numbers. Maybe, yeah, about 4 feet long. And they're about, oh, probably 18 to 24 inches, probably 24 by 5 feet. Then I put that top and bottom. Now, when this lamb is cooking on the fire and it gets cooked, you know, cooked meat comes away from the bones and sometimes it falls into the fire. So after I did this a time or two, I learned that you've either got to wire that guy on that pole pretty good or you got to have some steel crossbars. So I got a crank handle on the end of a 1¼-inch pipe, I believe it is, galvanized pipe. And I welded some flat iron across it. They're probably about 2 feet long, about a foot out on each side. And then you wire this critter on here very good with electric wire. Well, you know, electric fence wire, not electric wire, not wire that's got coating on it, you know, insulated. You just want plain wire. And electric wire just works kind of handy. Go down here to your local feed store and get yourself a roll of electric wire, you know, electric fence wire. And you just cut off some little strips of that and lengths of it and wire this guy on here. If you want to come to the Passover here at the ranch, well, you can do that. I usually recommend that to students. First time you do the Passover, it's kind of helpful. If you watch somebody actually do one and participate in it, And then there are 53 things that you need to keep in mind. 50 things in Exodus 12 that you need to perform in order to do this Passover. So if you'll go to Exodus 12 and read that chapter, it'll tell you. Now, we're going to do that as we progress through this series. But on this Passover night, the first beginning, Jesus took bread, blessed it, and passed it around to the group, the 12 disciples. Then he took wine and he blessed that, and he passed that around to the 12 disciples. And he did this after he washed their feet. So the first thing he did was he washed their feet. And remember, Peter got real upset about that, and he said, well, you ain't going to wash my feet, boss. And Jesus said, well, if I don't wash your feet, you don't have any part with me. And he told him that he wanted them to do that foot washing and that bread and wine from year to year, Passover to Passover, as a memorial to his sacrifice for us. I don't know how people do that at Easter, but at Passover, many people will do the foot washing, the bread and the wine. And then at the end of it, they all sang a song, and then they went out to the garden where they took him, and they beat him up and worked him over and finally killed him. So that's the Passover. Now that's the description. That's what Jim asked. Now we come to the nitty gritty. Now that you heard me tell you that story, where in the Bible does it tell you that? Because if that's just George Gordon's idea, then my idea isn't any better than the Catholics' Easter or the Jews' Passover on the 13th or anybody else's. Now remember, the Bible interprets the Bible. And so we start out in Isaiah 28, verses 9 through 13. And remember, that tells us a little story. And next time when we come back, we'll take a look at that story. And I'll show you that the Bible is written in code. And the reason that people don't practice the Passover is because they don't understand the code. So people don't practice biblical law. They practice religion. And Easter is religious, and religion is what people are into. People are not into law. They're into religion. And the Jews are into their religion, and they observe the Passover because they reject Christianity and they reject Easter. And I might say rightly so. But when you come to the Jews, except for a few odd groups that I have run into, a few odd groups that actually do the Passover and follow Exodus chapter 12, most Jews do not practice the Passover. They observe it. Now, they're just like people at Easter. You know, they observe Easter, or they observe Christmas, or they observe the 4th of July, etc. But they don't actually follow the instructions. They don't follow the dietary scheme. They don't follow the recipe that's given to us in Exodus chapter 12, which is where we will begin next time on the Law Hour and editorial review when we get to the Passover versus Easter next time. So let me remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our webpage. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I got to leave it right there. But we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.